You'll never have to worry about having buyer's remorse or even J-buyer's remorse when you do your shopping this holiday season on Amazon.com. Check out the 12 days of deals and get the best price on everything you need and help support Rob as a Podcast whenever you start your Amazon shopping with our link, robhasawebsite.com/Amazon. Or for our friends in Canada, it's robhasawebsite.com/AmazonCA. Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now, here's the guy who will not be confused with the Rob that doesn't suck today, Rob Sestrino. Hello, everybody, and welcome to a very big edition of Rob Has a Podcast. Really excited about this. It does not get much better than this in Survivor podcasting. The great Boston Rob Mariano will join us on the show. And it's time for all of us to smarten up, because we're going to get some knowledge dropped on us by Boston Rob, and that's coming up here in just a little bit. Really excited for that. It's been a great week of Survivor that we have in store for us. Last night, of course, I had the know-it-alls. This morning, I spoke with Abby Maria, so that was very exciting as well. For those of you guys listening to us on Thursday, Abby Maria exit interview, which you can check out on robhasawebsite.com. And then we'll do the voicemails coming up after this, separate podcast with Mike Bloom. So it's going to be a very big week here on Rob Has a Podcast. Of course, if you don't want to miss any of our Survivor coverage, our finale coverage, Amazing Race coverage coming up for the finale, make sure you subscribe to Rob Has a Podcast. Go to robhasawebsite.com/iTunes or search for Rob Has a Podcast in iTunes or your favorite podcatcher to make sure you subscribe to Rob Has a Podcast. All right, everybody. I'm very excited to have this person back with me here on the podcast. It's actually been just over 2 years since the last time we heard from him. Here he is, the great four-time Survivor and winner of Survivor Redemption Island and the author of the ultimate holiday stocking stuffer, the Boston Rob Rulebook. Here is the great Rob Mariano.
Thanks, Rob. How are you, man? Has it been that long?
You know, I looked it up. I looked it up. It was December 5th, 2013 was the last time that you were on.
Oh, my goodness. I was in Vegas. I remember where I was when we did it.
Yeah, you were like flying around. And anyway, it's been too long. That's on me. So very excited to have you back on. This is a big all-star season of Survivor. And I felt like it wasn't going to be right unless we heard from you to weigh in on all of this.
Well, I appreciate you having me. I'm a big fan of yours. I listen to your podcasts on occasion, and I got to say that what you do for the survivors, for the survivor community, you're officially like the Dr. Drew of Survivor. I couldn't do it, buddy. You have to listen to him week in and week out, and I got nothing but respect for you.
Yeah, now, a lot of people don't know this. Rob is actually here to campaign to go back for the fifth time. So,
yeah.
Rob, lay out the case.
Yeah, no, not so much. But you are a saint, brother. I am enjoying this season that's on. I think this is one of my favorite seasons that I haven't actually been a part of, if not my favorite season.
Wow.
I liked when Tyson won. You know, he's a good friend of mine, and that was cool. But this has been, it's been awesome. I don't know if it's like my kids started watching Survivor this season. They actually started last season, but this season they really have gotten into it. And, it's been like a little fun tradition. Wednesday nights, the kids, they get to eat their Doritos, and we watch as a family. It's kind of tough to hear everything, so sometimes I got to go back and watch it again, but it's pretty cool to actually be able to experience with them.
And who were your kids rooting for this season?
My girls were rooting for Joe.
Yep.
Yeah, I got to be honest with you. I was rooting for Joe.
Really?
I mean, there was a part of me, and I caught myself last week when he was voted off. There was a part of myself where I saw him, and I was like, come on, man, pull it out. And I'm like getting out of the chair, and I was like, I don't think I've ever done that for another contestant, you know, like verbally, like rooted for him on the TV. But yeah, he was an awesome competitor, you know. I mean, to the people that are left, I mean, I would have got rid of him too, you know. Yeah. But I felt like he was really embracing the whole you know, what it means to play the game and the strategy aspect of it. And what you don't see so much anymore is the adventure aspect of it. You know, I think he embodied that. My daughters were in tears. And I mean, this must be like a sign of what's to come with four girls. But they were in tears when, like, cried themselves to sleep. So I was able to get in touch with Joe. And actually, he was such a good sport. He called me the next day. We had a video call with him and my girls to make sure that they were all right and he was all right. And he was a good guy about it. But yeah, that's who they were voting for or rooting for this season. But yeah, there's still a bunch of contestants that I still like and that I'm still rooting for.
All right. Well, I'm really interested to get your take on all of this, because now here we go. We're going into the final six. A week from when we're recording this is going to be the finale. And so the big move that we saw in this episode, or the decision that was made, was ultimately to take out Abby Maria. And as I was watching that, I thought that that was sort of a weird way for them to go, to take out the person who seemed like that they were going to be the GOAT. And watching you in Survivor Redemption Island, like coming down the stretch, you weren't saying, boy, I got to get rid of the GOAT. You're saying to yourself, like, who are the people that I could sit next to that I feel like I can guarantee that I'm going to get the votes against? What are you thinking when you're watching them take out Abby Maria at 7?
I wouldn't have taken her out.
Yeah.
No, no way, buddy. I mean, especially look at the jury, you know, look at the people on there. I think they're going to reward somebody that's, you know, that's playing the game. These are players that have played before that have a respect for the game. I don't think you're going to see bitterness on the jury. So I would not have voted off Abby. I think it was a cop out. I mean, look, let me preface this like I do all the time. And it is from somebody that's played the game, you know, four times, and you know yourself, you don't see everything that transpires out there. So you don't know exactly what was on their minds and stuff. But from what I saw from watching, it seemed like there was a little bit of a dilemma in Spencer's mind on which way to go, which group to go with. And that's kind of inevitable when you win immunity at that stage in the game, you know. And I think he kind of took the easy way out by sticking with Jeremy and Tasha and that whole group. Because had he decided to flip, I think he could make a better case for himself for making big moves in the game. I think he just maybe played himself into third or fourth or second place. I don't know. I don't think he's going to win based on getting Abby out and going with that strategy.
Now, you and I haven't talked since before Spencer played in Cagayan, so I really don't know your take too much of him on a player. What has been your thought on him this season, and especially in these last couple episodes from when he made the move to go against Steven, but then he sort of doubled back to vote with Jeremy, and then this flirtation in this episode, but then sticks by Jeremy?
I like Spencer. You know, I liked him playing in Cagayan. I don't know. I mean, he still seems like he doesn't know who he is. It seems like he's looking for a little bit of redemption. He's still young, you know, and he is still young, you know, but I think he's trying to find himself. And that's kind of a no-no out there. He's trying to correct mistakes that he made last time. And if you're so focused on an image or what you're doing and not so much focused on how you're playing, that can really come back to bite you. Having said that, you know, he's done all right for himself. He's gotten himself to this point in the game. I just think that, you know, there's going to come a time. He can't sit with Jeremy and Tasha at the end. I mean, I think Jeremy wins in that scenario. I mean, I think Jeremy's playing a good game, but I mean, unless his intent is to take Jeremy out, and I haven't seen that. I haven't seen him vocalize that, or I haven't seen him act, you know. So if he thinks him and his bro are going to the final dance, sadly, I think he's going to be the one. And I could be wrong, you know, but that's the way it seems to me at this point.
Now, when I watch the season, I feel like the guy who I feel like is probably in the most similar position to where you would be, I think it's Jeremy. I feel like that he seems like the player that both in both his seasons, he sort of like builds up his core group and then has like a bunch of different people who feel like he's working with him. Do you relate to Jeremy at all? Also another Boston guy?
Yeah, he's from Boston. He's a Sox fan and a Pats fan. Of course I relate to him. He's a Cambridge firefighter.
Yeah.
I enjoy Jeremy. Yeah, I really, really like the way he's playing. I think he's doing a lot of the right things, you know, and everything you just said about, you know, building up his group and keeping him strong. I kind of understand what he was saying at the beginning of the episode about buyer's remorse, about, you know, not getting Joe up. But I mean, look, dude, you gotta take Joe out. He's too big of a threat, you know, and he double backed and got Abby out because I think, you know, a part of him is afraid about that girls alliance. Going forward, it's going to be interesting to see who wins immunity next. You remember Kelly has what, two idols?
No, she has one now.
Oh, she has one idol at this point. Okay.
She has one and Jeremy has one.
Yeah. Kelly's another one. I think she's playing a great game. I really like the move with the idol. I think everybody did.
Yeah.
But she, you know, it's funny, Rob. The first time there was an all-star season, we played in it, you and I together. If you remember, I know you do, at the time, there was lots of big names, marquee names in that season. There was Richard Hatch, Ethan Zahn, Lex, you know. And then there was like this guy that was voted off seventh, mm-hmm. who was me.
Yeah.
And there was Amber, who was kind of quiet, you know. And it, like, we were less of draws at the time, less of the bigger names, you know, than the other people that were out there. And I think in an all-star season, that works to your advantage. And this is no disrespect to Kelly, but I didn't really know who she was. Oh, she wasn't really that much on my radar, you know, when the cast was announced. And I think that helped her in a way.
Yeah.
And I think her gameplay has obviously helped her, too. It seems like in these big seasons, sometimes the big names are the targets first.
It makes a lot of sense. And I know, like, coming into the All-Stars, I don't think that anybody was coming into that season like, well, okay, we got to make sure Amber doesn't win. And certainly, you know, I wasn't saying, okay, like, you know, the guy you got to, you know, watch out for that's going to really dominate this thing is going to be Mariano. And certainly, you know, but these players have seen this now play out now where Parvati comes in and wins in the Fans versus Favorites and then Sandra wins in Heroes versus Villains. And I know coming into the season, I was saying that, and I think that we probably texted about this. I felt like I said, Natalie Tenorelli, that's going to be the winner of this season. I said she had a little bit of trouble getting on. I don't know if how Natalie would have played if she would have gotten out there. But I feel like that was sort of in the air a little bit of we got to watch out for it's the people that you don't expect.
In the all-star seasons, in the big marquee name season, it's not the big names you got to watch out for. It's the lesser names, and they can really do some damage. I mean, I'm a product of that from the beginning, and I know that I was able to escape under the radar a few times because they're bigger fish to fry. You know, just based on reputation alone. But getting back to this season, I really, you know, I think that, you know, and I don't mean that in a disrespectful way at all to Kelly, because I think she's playing a great game. But I think, you know what, you have to use every advantage you have in this game, you know?
Yeah. Did you have that coming into Heroes versus Villains? Like, were you sort of thinking about things that way? Because you played in the two previous all returning player seasons in the All-Stars and Heroes versus Villains. Were you sort of coming back that way and thinking of like it's the people that we're not so worried about that are the threats?
I was so shocked to get a call from, you know, Mark about going back to play Survivor again. I couldn't believe it. I was like, you know, I play hockey. My skates were hung up, you know, so to speak, after Survivor All-Stars. I never thought I'd go back and play again. Mm-hmm. So when the opportunity arose to go back again, I was gung-ho, let's go, you know, and I wasn't worried because I didn't know who I was going to be out there. And there were a lot of players that were new. There was a lot of time between the seasons. I mean, the first All-Stars was season 8. The Heroes and Villains was season 20. It was 12 seasons in between.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of time, a lot of new players and, you know, people that I hadn't met before. So even though you might have a reputation, sometimes, you know, you have a chance to change people's perceptions if you've never met them before. I remember on Heroes and Villains, I, like, my perception of Tyson was I don't want anything to do with this guy.
Yeah.
You know, and then come to find out, you know, his sarcasm is very similar to mine. And even though you think we'd butt heads, we actually got along really good. And, you know, I get him, he gets me. And we ended up, besides the fact that he played like a bonehead and got me voted off. No. I mean, he did what he thought was in it. I think he admittedly thinks that, you know, I don't know if he made a mistake, but ultimately because he got voted off, I guess he did. But
hey, look, he won another time. We could say he made a mistake that other time.
Which is crazy that he actually came back and won also, you know?
Well, I always think it's crazy that, you know, you two guys
But hold on. I don't want to interrupt you, but that actually lends to my point again, where like there's certain scenarios where the lesser known will be able to make its way through. And not that Tyson was lesser known, but if you remember in Tyson's season, very early on, Rachel, his girlfriend at the time, wife now, got voted off, mm-hmm. right? So because of that, and I actually just saw Tyson and Rachel, and I was talking to him about this, and I told her she's the reason why he won. Because indirectly she is, because I think that took a huge threat, like a huge part of the puzzle target off of him, because she was gone, her loved one was gone. So he could now bond with the other people whose loved ones were gone. And they were in the minority. They weren't as big of a threat as the people whose loved ones were still in, and there would be potentially two votes had they been on the same tribe or a mix-up or whatever. So because she got voted off early, there was something that took the immediate target and radar off of him that allowed him to survive in the early stages of the game. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And he got hurt, too. And people were like, oh, okay, well, now Tyson's not at full strength, so you don't have to worry about him in the challenges as much. So he had a, you know, it turned out two things that looked like they were unlucky turned out to be positives for him.
Right. And it's funny because in the game of Survivor, that happens a lot. You know, like things, luck plays a huge factor in the game, a lot more than people realize. You have to be able to control yourself and your own emotions and what you do. But at the same time, there's a lot that you don't have control over, and you know that can sway the game one way or another.
How different is this season of all returning players, where you had in All Stars and Heroes vs. Villains a couple people coming back that had won the game? This is a season of all people who've never won the game. They all lost, and they're all one-time players. Does that change anything for you coming back and watching this season?
I don't know. I mean, for them, still only one person's going to win. You get a 5% chance at the outset, if there's 20 people start the game, to win, you know, just from a purely mathematical point of view. The fact that nobody else won, I guess it like makes it so that there's not an easy first target, so to speak. Like, people that have won before are often targeted, or they were back then, you know. Mm-hmm. Sandra made it all the way to the end, but I don't think that really took away. Like I said, this season has been like awesome in my eyes.
Now, who do you know from this season, these players? Like, there has to be people that you ran into. Do you know Kimmy at all?
I do not.
Okay.
No. No, I don't think there's anyone that I know.
What about Varner? You had to run into Varner back in the day.
I know Jeff from the old days. Yeah, I do. I haven't seen him. Actually, I saw him this summer at a charity event. We spoke briefly, but yeah, I know Jeff really wanted it really bad. You could see the passion when he was playing. Ultimately, it wasn't meant to be for him, but Jeff's a great guy. Always has been.
Yeah, you were rooting for Jeff?
Yeah, I mean, I was rooting for Steven. I know Steven, you know. Mm-hmm. Steven's been to my house back when he used to date Courtney a long time ago. And they came by a while back. It's funny, Tyson was there at the time. I think Rachel and Tyson weren't married yet, and we took a picture. It was me, Amber, Tyson, JT was there. This is here in Florida now.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, after the picture was taken, I think Amber had won, JT had won, I came in second. Did Tyson finish second in a season?
No.
Oh, he didn't. Okay. That might have been the joke. Courtney finished second, and Steven finished second, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so the joke was that Tyson was the only one that wasn't part of the group. And then subsequently, Rachel gets on the show, and then Tyson wins, and then I win. So I thought Steven was going to pull off the trifecta for us.
Yeah.
I thought he played good, too.
Yeah.
You know?
So, yeah, Talk about Steven's game this season, because, you know, he was there and, you know, he was with Andrew, and I think he was a little sort of like boxed in with not being able to play the game that he wanted to play early on. But then after the merge, he was able to make some moves and ultimately go for that advantage. So you were proud of Steven?
Of course. Yeah, I was proud of him. He clearly wanted it. You know, I think there was a little bit in the back of his mind, a little bit of baggage about, I got to get it done, I got to get it done. Sometimes when you try so hard, you can't will it. You know, it's not like, I don't know how to explain it, Rob. It's not like in other things where you, like, you will yourself to win. Survivor, you can will it all you want, but still sometimes you still get kicked down. And I think he played great. I really enjoyed the early days. You know, they kind of made him look a little bit like goofy and stuff. And I remember the first scene when he's kicking the log or the rock or whatever. Admittedly, he's not really, you know, an outdoor guy. I don't think.
I can relate.
He's more of an indoor boy.
Can you go back to what you were saying about that you can't will it? Like you can in other, say, like sports where, you know, he just wanted it more and that's why he got in the end zone on that play. Are you saying that it's because luck is involved, or you're saying that you have to sort of have it come to you?
You do have to let it come to you. You have to be patient. You have to know when to step on the gas, and you have to know when to shut your mouth and lay off of it, you know? But beyond all of that, like, there's still scenarios that you can't control. In sports, I mean, there's still, like, you know, in sports, it's not really a good analogy, because a lot of people say, like, they willed the win. But, I mean, like, it doesn't matter how hard you try. Sometimes it still won't work out. I make a lot of analogies between poker. I play a lot of poker now in Survivor. And I think one of the big analogy is, in poker, like, all you can do is get your money in with the best hand. So it's tough if you don't play poker, but for example, if you have the best hand at the time and you put all your money in and ultimately you end up losing the hand, you've done everything you can do.
Yeah.
And the luck factor comes in, or something strange happens and you end up losing, like, and that's what you strive to do. So that's what makes the game really challenging and really hard. You can outthink your opponent, and even if you outthink them and you're right, the result still doesn't always end up the same way. So, I mean, look, Survivor's not a crapshoot. Don't get me wrong. You know, it's not like you're just rolling the dice and seeing what happens. Like, there's a lot that goes into it, and you have to be able to make moves and counteract and everything else. But you can't necessarily, just because you want it so bad, like, say, I'm going to do everything I can and work real hard and make the best alliances and make my backup alliances and do everything so that I guarantee to win. Like, you can't do that. Yeah. You know?
No, it totally makes sense to me. I definitely understand
that. You can't control the other people. You can to a degree, or you can influence them, but ultimately you can't take their will. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Going back to Steven for a second, in the moment where he had the chance to get the advantage in the game, did you feel like that was the right move for him to make?
I don't know. I mean, doing something like that has its immediate advantages, but it also has huge repercussions. If he felt as if he needed it and like he was in danger of getting voted out if he didn't have it, then I think it's a good move to go for it. You know, if he felt that he needed it, then he should go for it. But, you know, if you don't have a lot of time to think about these things, because it's a split second, Jeff brings it up and you have to do it. But you have to consider the repercussions of doing something like that. Because if you do it and you don't ultimately get it, or even if you do get it, you're obviously putting a target on yourself, because now you have it that they don't know about, number one. And number two, you're saying something to your tribe: I don't feel safe. So whatever alliances I have, I don't really trust them. I don't feel that, like, you're, and that's a tough thing, because this game is based on perceived trust, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the bigger question is that advantage worth saying to his alliance, I guess, you know, I'm really more concerned with protecting myself because, you know, maybe you guys are not going along with everything you're saying.
I know it's impossible to know for sure because you're not in the moment. What would you have done?
I think it would depend on how I felt. But just off the top of my head, I don't think I would have gone for it.
Yeah.
I don't think I would have gone for it. I think I would have been more reactory, meaning that it's really, it is hard to say. Like, we're playing Monday morning quarterback on this thing. But I think just knowing myself, I would figure out a way to use that to my advantage without actually putting myself out there, meaning that I'd probably stay there and watch Steven go for it and then use it against him.
Yeah.
The target is S.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or anybody that went for it.
Yeah.
The guy that didn't go for it, Spencer, that didn't get it. You know, it's easy to rally the troops. You see what he did? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to rally against something like that. And you have time to actually think about formulating a plan. You got to be careful about acting before you think about things through in Survivor. And sometimes you have to make split decisions. That's why I said I can't fault them because, you know, if he felt, and I think he probably did feel, like, not that he was on the immediate chopping block, but that he would need this at some point, or he felt that I have no chance of winning this challenge, so this is a better way for me. But ultimately, people think about that, because if you do get it, then, you know, look at idols, all of that stuff. They're another way to put targets on yourself that you don't necessarily have to have.
One of the things that a lot of the players have been talking about, and I think this is good to talk about in terms of Steven going for that advantage, is this idea of, I need to make big moves in the game to sort of pad my resume because I need to have this resume in front of the jury. Do you subscribe to that?
No. I mean, look, you have to play the game. You have to make a case for yourself. But big moves, what? Like, I heard Tasha say it this week. You know, I have to make a move or something. So it's like, look, if you haven't done something to this point, I think you're up the creek at this point. You know, you have to play the game through. And this idea of making a big move is basically a blindside, right? Mm-hmm. Or switching or jumping ship or whatever. They're making that to be the new cool thing to do. Where back when I played, you know, I would rather it the other way. But the game's evolved. You know, so like I heard a lot in the beginning about the old school versus new school and this and that. And, you know, you got to adapt, but it doesn't necessarily have to be one or another. You know, I like them. I would make them play my school, you know, or try to anyway. Anything that you can use to divide will ultimately come back to help or hurt you. But you better just be careful about what side you're on. So it seems to me, to get back to your question, that this season, jumping ship seems to be the thing to do, right? This idea of voting blocks or whatever. They don't want to call it alliance for whatever reason. But that's all garbage too, because within all the voting blocks, there are alliances. For whatever reason, they don't want to say it. But there's people that are tight with each other that have been there. You can look at the final seven or the final six now, and you can see who was with who the entire time. I think Abby was the only wild card of the whole group. Why would you get rid of that? I mean, she's unpredictable, but still, you know, I mean, figure out a way to bring her in.
Yeah. The idea where they went on the reward, where Keith and Kelly and Spencer went on the reward, and Abby Maria was the person that was left back at camp. And there were four people left back at camp and three people on the reward. I was really surprised that somehow it turned into, hey, we got to vote Abby out instead of trying to recruit her to be a part of what, you know, Jeremy and Tasha were doing.
Yeah, I mean, but like I said, I think the alliances from the beginning are starting to show through. But I would have, I mean, I don't know, Rob, like I said, we only see 42 minutes of so many hours.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think it's ever a good idea to win a reward, you know, after the merge.
Yeah. Have you ever won a reward after the merge?
I don't think I have. I don't remember, to be honest with you. I remember one. Rupert won.
Yeah.
And took us on. But rewards after the merge are usually trouble, unless you can stay in the majority,
yeah,
which you usually never do. You know, if it's even or if it's a majority, then it's okay. But you always want to stay with the majority because your greatest allies can be swayed if you're enjoying something and they're not, you know?
Didn't you win the car in the All-Stars?
I did. I won the car.
Okay.
Yeah,
and that wasn't like a combined car with immunity thing. That was a separate
reward. I don't remember if it was combined with immunity, but I won the car. It was
you
the
went
truck,
to the movies,
and I got to bring one person, and I chose Amber, and she got a car too.
Yeah,
yeah. And there was some. There was definitely animosity back at camp, but I think at the time, who was left? It was Rupert, Jenna, who were a pair, and there was Big Tom and maybe Shan.
You know, I think they used to do it at five. Yeah.
Okay, so maybe it was just Big Tom and like. They could be mad all they wanted, but there wasn't anything they could do at that point.
Yeah.
Right.
Talk about the moment where Jeremy played the idol on Steven. So Jeremy has two idols. He finds out that one of his tight allies in the game is going to be voted out. And so he ends up playing his idol to save Steven. And then Steven ends up getting voted out at the subsequent tribal council. Did you think in the moment, was that a good move, a move that you would have made to save your ally if you had two idols?
I don't know. I think I maybe would have found another ally. But yeah. what he did was get himself a jury vote.
Yeah.
You know, that, I mean, in that respect, you know, he's, how many people are on the jury this season? Seven?
No, I think it's 10.
Well, that's 10% of the way there. He's 10%, which actually equates to more if they chop it three ways. If there's three people in the final.
Yeah.
It's actually worth more than 10% equity-wise. But yeah, I don't know if I would have saved him. It's hard to say, but I think I would have figured out a way to recruit a new ally than to go down that path. I mean, those idols are valuable if you got them. You got to know when to play them, though. It was a bold move. I liked it. From a TV point of view and a viewer point of view, it was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I didn't necessarily like how Steven kind of felt indebted to him after, though.
Yeah, you didn't like it for Steven, or you didn't like it?
No, I didn't like it from Steven's point of view.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, that was awesome. You saved me, you know, but like, you got to remember, it's still a game, you know, like you don't owe him anything.
Yeah.
But from Jeremy's point of view, you know, I think it was good. It was a good move in terms of securing a vote. I think if Jeremy makes it to the end, I don't see how Steven doesn't vote for him.
Sure. Steven's got to vote for Jeremy if he makes it to the end.
I would think so, right?
Yeah. Could you talk a little bit about this jury management as we get down the stretch here? Because talking about the episode tonight, I was saying with Spencer, I thought it made a lot more sense for him to go to the side that had Abby Maria and Keith on it if that was available to him. But at the same time, then he ends up burning Tasha and Jeremy with the jury votes. So what do you think is ultimately more important as a person who's won in the final three and lost in a final two? What's more important? Do you want to be there with people that you can beat, but potentially have people pissed off at you? Or are you better off to sort of like stick with people that, you know, people aren't pissed off at you, but maybe you can't beat them?
Look, I'm a purist from a game point of view, right?
Yeah.
From a strategic point of view. This idea that I'm going to go to the end against the best person, garbage.
Yeah.
Throw it out the window, man. I mean, you want to go to the end against people that you can beat. That's the object of the game, is to win. So you want to go against people you can beat. Because at the end of the day, why do you want to sit next to somebody that can beat you?
Yeah.
Okay, if you get to the end and you positioned yourself against the people that you can beat, and the jury decides to give it to somebody who didn't play as well as you, then you know what? You've done all you can do. And for whatever reason, you really mismanaged them, which I did in Survivor All-Stars, you know, admittedly. Like, I don't blame anybody but myself for not winning that season. I should have thought about how I was voting these people off. I didn't have to be as crass as I was about it. Do you know what I mean? I could have been a little bit more sympathetic about it. Yet you still have to blindside them. You have to do it, and you have to manage that final tribal council, and you have to manage it in a way that's going to make whoever you voted off feel as if, you know what, he did me dirty, he did me wrong, but at the end of the day, he played the best game, and I'm going to give him my vote to win. And that's not always an easy thing to do.
Yeah, I'm really interested in this. So are you saying that you feel like in Survivor All-Stars, that you actually, any of the moves you made were the wrong moves, or just the way you went about executing some of the things could have been handled better?
Yeah, I was young, man. I think, no, the moves I made were fine. They were correct.
Yeah.
I mean, it got me to the end with someone who I thought I could beat, and I thought I played the best game. But I wasn't, you know, I kind of bulldozed my way to the end and felt as if, you know what, I won this game. You need to give me the money and you need to, like give me my props. But I neglected to realize that these people that I played against and that I beat are human emotional creatures, people that, you know, like these emotions are going to dictate how they're going to vote, not perceived reality, mm-hmm. not what is actually right or wrong, because there's no, and this is a beautiful thing about Survivor, there's no script or there's no rules or there's no framework on how you're supposed to vote. It's up to you as a person. So you can be like, you know what, on day 35, you looked at me weird and I'm not giving you my vote. Well, for whatever reason, there's none of that. And I never really took the time to kind of massage that. I got up there and, you know, I was taken aback. I was young, you know, and I got a lot of shit from a lot of people and they made me feel bad. And it's like, oh my God, all of a sudden, like, here I am. I think I just played the game of my life and now these people are making me feel bad. And I was like, oh my God, I really hurt them. I could see the emotion. And all I could do was sit there and say, I'm sorry. You know, like, I didn't mean to hurt your feelings. But what I should have did was say, you know what? Look, I'm sorry that your feelings got hurt, but I did what I needed to do to get there. Mm-hmm. And I played the game I played, you know, and the reason why. And I didn't own it at that point.
But in fairness to you, that sure, I think most of us who follow Survivor at this point in time know that. But I mean, even if you had seen every single tribal council up to that point, I'm not sure if you had or not. There was only, you know, six you possibly could have seen. It's not like we don't know the rule book, you know, from front to back like we know it now. So
no.
I think that that is much more like I think that's kind of like Survivor 101 or 201 of the way you're supposed to be in the final tribal council. But it was only Survivor 8.
Exactly. It was new. And, you know, each situation is unique. Each tribal council is unique. Each season is unique. And ultimately, look, indirectly, I still ended up with the million.
So, you're that good. You figured out a way to get there.
I'm not crying about it. And not to take anything away from my wife. Like, I really do feel like she deserved to win in that respect, that there was a part of the job that I didn't finish. So I'll tell you what, though. Winning Redemption Island a few years later has been great in my house because I don't have to hear anymore, well, I was the winner. I was the winner. You were second place. So if not for anything else at home, it kind of evened the score.
Yeah. And in fairness, you know, I've gone through and I've watched, you know, all of the seasons since then. And that's probably, I can't imagine what you think about that. But in terms of going back and watching that season again, you know, I gave Amber more credit than I did in the first watch of it. I think she was involved in more decisions than I thought in the initial 2004 watching of it.
Yeah. I mean, we were both kids. Mm-hmm. I was a kid and she's 2-3 years younger than me.
Yeah.
So, I mean, she was really a kid. I think we did all right.
Yeah.
So
now, but going back to that thing about the final tribal council, do you feel like that just the final tribal council, that's exactly the same, the way that people approach it in terms of how they vote as they were in Survivor 8, as they will be in Survivor 31?
No, I think it's different. I think there's more criteria. There's more, you know, now, and especially in this season, you know, watch if they don't hold it against them because, you know, of some predetermined rules that they said they were going to do on day 15 or day 20 about how they were going to play voting blocks or this or that. I mean, it doesn't, I've never been on a jury, you know, in the four times that I've played the game.
Which is kind of crazy.
Yeah, that is kind of crazy. But I was voted off right before or I made it all the way to the end. But I mean, I can't imagine how it feels to have to make that decision after you've been voted off. You know, that's got to be, it's got to be tough because now you're empowering the person that beat you. So to be able to, you know, look someone in the eye and decisively say, you know what, objectively, you played the game better than me. You deserve my vote. I think that's sometimes difficult when emotions get involved because ultimately it's difficult to be rational and objective when you're emotional. And I think more than anything else, emotion drives people than objectivity, mm-hmm. especially in this high stress situation of playing this game and the fact that, you know, there's $1 million prize at the end of it, which, by the way, how come that hasn't gone up in 20 years? Right.
Yeah. Would you be happy if it goes up, or would you be annoyed that, hey, how come it was only $1 million when I won?
No, I wouldn't be annoyed. I mean, it's a sign of the times. It's been 30 seasons.
Well, do you watch the show? Because I feel like there's a lot of people that are from the era where we first played the game that watch the show and say, like, oh, these kids, they have it so easy. You know, when we had to play Survivor, we had to walk uphill to Tribal Council both ways. Do you sort of look at it like the new players have it easier, or in some ways is it harder than when we first initially played the game?
I don't think it's easy. I think it's different. It's different in the respect that when we originally played, it was more about an adventure. It was more about, you know, leaving your world for 6 weeks, going on an island, creating this society, and playing a game. Although in the beginning, only a few of us were able to really, you know, figure out that it was a strategic game,
mm-hmm.
right? And those are the ones that did well, were the ones that were able to figure that out from yeah. from the outset. You obviously one of them. Now, everybody's a strategist. I mean, the game's been played 30 times. You don't see glaring mistakes anymore, usually. For the most part, the framework's been written and people know how to play the game from a strategic point of view. But more than anything else, the game has shifted from being an adventure to a social experiment. It's more of a social game in how you deal and interact with people than it's ever been before. And that was evident for me, you know, from going from season four to season 22. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was night and day different. You had to manage people. You have to create these relationships. And I use the term a few times in this interview, perceived reality, because your reality, it's not like it is your reality at the moment, but the game is based so much more on the people you're playing with and how they actually perceive you, you know? So their reality, you have to be able to see things through the eyes of everybody. It's like, I don't know if it was Descartes or Immanuel Kant, the philosopher that said, I am not who I am. I am who you think I think I am, you know? And that's like pretty profound, but it's true. In Survivor, it's not who I think I am. It's not even who you think I am. It's who I think that you think I think I am. You know, take a minute and think about that from like, I'm being serious, from a strategic point of view, it makes perfect sense. So you have to really get into somebody's head on what they're saying and try to digest it more so now than you ever had to do before. In season four, if somebody said, I'm voting for this one, they were probably voting for that person.
Yeah.
Or they weren't voting for that person. But it wasn't like, is he telling me that he's voting for this person because he wants me to think something else? And you have to see it through their eyes of what would be beneficial for them.
Is there anything that you could talk about in how do you do that? And it makes all the sense in the world. What you're saying, but how do you put it into practice?
It's a gift, buddy. It's a gift. You gotta eat.
Do you have to know that before you get to the island, how to do that?
I don't know if it can be taught. I'm not kidding. Like you have to be able to read people, you know? Okay. So the stuff they can teach you, like the basic psychology stuff would be like stuff like physical tells and, you know, watching people's body language, because their body language actually gives off more than what they're saying. Watch what they're doing and how they react to certain situations. Okay, that's on a simple, regular level. But if you're talking to somebody else that also knows what you know or that also understands this, you have to then figure out if they're telling you this because that's what their intention is, or if they're telling you this because they want you to think otherwise. someone like Poverty, who really gets that part of the game, you have to be careful because she's very good at that. Like, I've played with her and I know her, and, you know, she understands. She gets it.
So to put it another way, it's like you have to understand what character you are in the eyes of the person that you're dealing with and make sure you're being that character to that person. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but you not only have to understand what character they perceive you as, but you have to check your own, you know, check yourself to make sure that what you're perceiving them to perceive you as is actually accurate. Never mind, like, if you think that they think you're great, it's if you think that they think that you're great and your thinking is actually correct. So through your own eyes, why? So, okay, the basic, let me try to give an example, because this is like, I understand it in my head, but I have a tough time verbalizing it sometimes. But it would be like a situation where if you wanted something, a desired result, right? If you wanted somebody to do something, right? Then there's two ways about going. There's more than two ways. There's many ways. But one way of going about getting somebody to do something is to try to see it through their eyes. Okay? Well, through their eyes, they're only interested in them. So you have to phrase it in a way that makes them want to do it. So people are usually driven by incentive. What's in it for me? So you figure out a way to present what you want them to do in a way that's pleasing for them. But then you also have to think, well, what are they going to think if you're presenting it this way? Because, okay, I'm telling you that this will be good for you. That's why we should do this. Why are you telling me this? And somebody that understands it will immediately think, okay, well, what's in it for me, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be able to figure out a way to get that person that's automatically going to look at it on the surface as, yeah, this is good for you, but what's in it for you, to actually revert back to, actually, this is a better deal for me.
Yeah.
And it's kind of complicated how to do it, but there are certain techniques of, you know, psychological manipulation that you can use to do that. This is deeper stuff, but I mean, like, it's simple on the surface. I mean, one perfect example, an easy example is, okay, way back when there was a time on the beach where Rupert and Big Tom were talking and, you know, that this one wants you out and he wants you out and they're coming at me from both angles. So, like, the simple thing is to go to each of them individually and, you know, like, a very simple example is, like, you say, what are you talking about? I don't want you out. He said the same thing to me. Then you go to the other person and say the same thing. The next thing you know, they're at each other's throats and you're sitting on the sidelines.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's very basic, but, I mean, it gets a lot more involved when you're dealing with people that know beyond the simplistic.
Now, did you know you knew how to do this before you came to Survivor, or was this like after the first time you played, sort of starting to think about it and then coming back with more of that mindset?
No, I mean, it's not like something that I said, like, I was half joking when I said, like, it's a gift, but it's like innate inside of me. Like, I went to school for psychology, but honestly, I went to school because it was easy and I got it. And maybe I just, like, I understand people. In order to understand people, you have to understand what motivates them. Everybody's motivated by different things. Some people are motivated by money. Some people are motivated by love. Philip Shepard's a good example. He was motivated by attention.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So and I love Philip. I haven't talked to him for a while. If he's listening, Philip, I got to give you a call. I owe you a call, buddy. But Philip, like, all you had to do, like, in the beginning stages of Redemption Island, you know, Philip and I clashed big time. He wanted me out. He wanted to be the top dog. Well, that's kind of tough to do with me because, like, I don't ride in the back seat. I like to drive. That's the way I play the game. That's the way I live my life. Like, I like to be a driver. That's where I do good. I know who I am. That's how I like to play. If I did differently than that, I'd be not only be doing myself a disservice, but I wouldn't play optimally. Okay. Mm-hmm. So Philip and I are clashing, and then I have to realize, okay, how am I going to figure out a way to turn this to my advantage? Do I vote him off and be done with them? Some people you have to do that with if you don't think you'll be able to control them and get in their head. The girl that was voted off, that we voted off first that season, no, not Francesca, the other one.
Christina.
She was a perfect example. Christina was uncontrollable. That's why she had to go. She probably would have been a great player. But I recognized that from the outset. That's why she had to go.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting off track. But Philip,
no, this is great.
I realized, Philip, I had to just sit and listen to him for a minute and listen to his stories. Okay, and I'm not talking about I'm a special agent, I'm this, I'm that. Listen to his life stories. And like a lot of people, when they listen, they don't listen. They hear, but they don't listen to what the person's saying. You have to go beyond hearing exactly like what they're saying and what's the underlying meaning in it. Because in general, most people are selfish beings, but they have something they want to say. And Philip's telling me his story, how he grew up. He had 16 brothers and sisters, and you know, he's a special agent, and he came from, you know, a town in New York. Okay, just that information alone that I just gave you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Think about it. He had 16 brothers and sisters, and I don't even know if that number is correct, but that's
it's
what I remember.
Like that, yeah.
Okay, imagine for a second, try to put yourself in that position, Rob. Imagine you grew up with 16 brothers and sisters. What do you think that would be like?
Mm-hmm.
You'd probably be starving for attention from your parents, from your mother, a mother's love. I mean, that you're stretched pretty thin. We got four kids in my house, and I'm telling you, like, there's days where I'm like, oh my God, did I tell this one I love? You know, 16, mm-hmm. like you need to feel the love. He became a special agent. He's touting his own, you know, background and everything. And it hit me. This guy, he wants to be heard. He hasn't been heard. He wants to be heard. So let me take Philip and put him up on a pedestal and do it in a way that empowers him and makes him feel special. I don't ultimately want to give him control of the game. I'll give him what he needs. And in return, this guy will be loyal to me. And he was all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason I was able to recognize that and have that kind of relationship with Philip was because I sat there and listened to him. And nobody else did. Everybody else wrote him off as a whack job. They laughed at him, this and that and everything else. Had they taken the time to sit there and listen to what he was saying and be able to decipher it, I mean, the game could have been completely different. They could have used him in a heartbeat to get me out if they coddled him. But instead, they didn't. And that's a perfect example. Like someone like Abby this season where, you know, in the beginning, she was talking about she wants to be different. She wants to make a change. And then she started to get on someone's nerves. Abby might be a little bit different because I don't know that Abby would have been able to be as loyal as Philip was. But I would have tried,
mm-hmm.
you know. Especially at this stage in the game with seven people left. I mean, I never met Abby, and I like her. I like watching her on TV, but I don't know that she could have won.
Yeah.
You know, given what I've seen on TV.
Well, I agree with you. I think that there are a lot of similarities between Philip and Abby Maria. And I think that if somebody would have shown Abby Maria the attention that you showed Philip, I think that she would have been a very loyal person. I think she's passionate is the word that I use to describe her, because she's sort of like, if she's your friend, she loves you and, you know, you can, you know, probably, you know, go, you know, she'll do anything for you. But if you cross her once, you know.
Well, see, that's the thing. There's a catch 22 in all of this, right? And
yeah.
That is that this love that I showed to Philip, it was real and it was genuine and it has to be. Granted, I'm still playing a game and I'm using it as means to an end. But that's why we created Stealth R Us. That's why we did these things. I know it sounds funny. It's funny. It is funny, you know, but it has to be genuine, because if it's not genuine, people can read through that. It's very easy to see a phony, to see when you're doing something just to benefit yourself, because you won't be able to keep it up. You know, in the back of my mind, I know that I'm using Philip as a piece in this game, and we're working in conjunction. But in the end, I'm going to, you know, end up on top. But I never made him feel like a pawn. I made him feel like my right-hand man. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And you have to do that. I mean, I don't know why that's difficult for some people to see. But
so in that way, are you sort of like, are you tricking yourself in that way where it's like, okay, I know at some point.
No, I'm not tricking myself. I know exactly what I'm doing. I'm not tricking myself, but I'm being genuine in that I know how I'm proceeding in this. And it's not like you know from day one, okay, this is what I'm going to do, whatever. You take it day by day, you know, and you try different things. And if it works, then you stick with it. But it's not like, oh, I had this master plan on day three and I said, okay, this is what I'm going to do. And that's what I'm going to do, because that's not Survivor. The number one rule of Survivor is adaptation. You have to be able to adapt. Charles Darwin, Origin of the Species, you know, the species that are best able to adapt will be able to survive. That's like true in this game. It's true in the game of human social experience. And that is that, like, you know, no matter what it is, like if your business is in banking or finance, you know, and the market crashes, you know, and you blame it on yourself and that's it, and my business is over and that's it, well, then, you know, then you're going to die with it. But if you figure out a way to use the down market to your advantage and you're able to adapt to the situation, then you will ultimately thrive. Sorry, buddy. We're getting off track. Yeah.
Rob, you're blowing me away tonight. I'm speechless. That's not easy to do.
Well, I mean, it's just, and it's not easy. Like, Survivor's not easy. And, like, I mean, I'm talking like I know everything, but I don't. You know, I definitely don't. And, like, it's not like there's one rule. And it's funny, Amber and I, we sit and we Monday morning quarterback. Of course we do. We love the show. We watch it. Oh, this was a great move. Oh, that was a bonehead move. But you don't know unless you're in the situation. And what's hard for me is I don't know many of these contestants personally, so I don't know how I would deal. The only thing I know about them is how they played, you know, in their previous seasons. And what I've seen of those seasons, which we know is not the whole thing.
You know, we haven't talked since Blood versus Water, and I'm especially kicking myself for that, because you've been so good here tonight. What did you think about Tony?
Tony, what was it, the donkey caller, bird caller?
llama talk.
The llama, yeah. Oh, my God. It was funny. I like Tony. I like the way he played. I thought he was strong. Cass, on the other hand, was in that season. I like Cass's tenacity, but I think there's something about, and we talk about like old school, new school, there's something about the way the game's played today where people see a bigger picture. You know, they see not only how the game will directly impact their lives, but how the implications of how they're portrayed can potentially affect their lives. There's this whole thing called social media now that never existed in season four.
Mm-hmm.
There's interaction with different media outlets that we never had. I mean, if we wanted to do an interview, you had to go through CBS's marketing. You know, you had to fly to New York, sit down. They had a special room with the phone, and that was it. And now everybody has become a salesperson. Right. Okay. And to you know, their credit, it's a changing time and you got to sell yourself and make it while you can. And I'm all for that. But the thing is, I think some of the contestants, Cass, the savvier ones, are able to figure out a way to, they see how they're going to be perceived and they try to steer the direction of that mm-hmm. beyond what's shown on TV. So back when we first played, it was what was shown on TV and what we said in our interviews. And most of the people watched the hour-long television show. And most of them never read any of the interviews except for the diehard fans. So what you saw was what you got. And now it seems like you can put out a lot more of information to the contrary or information to bolster whatever your desired result may be from being on the show. So it's more than, like I said before, just an adventure. It goes beyond that. And I think Cass, to me, was, and I could be wrong, but it seemed to me like she was very aware of all of that, and that I think affected not only how she played the game, but I think maybe like how she was portrayed before affected how she played this time negatively.
How much, if you came into this Second Chance season, would you have relied on that sort of thing of not just understanding the people, but also sort of like understanding the story of them from their first season? And if everybody's here for redemption, what is the thing that they are there to redeem?
I don't care who you are. Every one of them is out there for one reason. Me too. What is it, Rob?
To win the money.
That's right. They're all out there to win the money. That's what they're there for. They're there to win the money, first and foremost. But some of them will and do every season get sidetracked by other things. That's why you have to be careful. Look at Survivor takes its toll on you. Like the physical, the emotional, and the mental. Like it's just, it beats you up. And it makes it, it's easy for you to lose sight of what the goal is. But when it starts out on day one, everybody's motivation is the same. Along the way, things change. A good example was Maddie in Redemption Island. You know, he was there. The first day he was there, he was there to win the money. And then somewhere along the way, he got sidetracked into a mission about God and spreading his religious beliefs. And ultimately, well, that combined with me sending him back to Redemption Island, but ultimately that ended
you sent
up
him back to go look for him again.
Right? No. But I think that kind of like took over, and it's good for people because you have to find meaning beyond just winning. Because, like I said, 19 are going to fail, only one's going to win, right?
Yeah.
So you have to take something else away from the experience, but if you decide what you're taking away before you're actually voted out, you're doomed.
Good point. Can you help people find that thing? Could you use that as a tool?
Me personally?
You personally or anybody who's playing? Could you sort of set somebody off on that path that's a distraction?
They usually do it to themselves.
Okay,
I'm serious. They do. They usually they do it to themselves, and then, you know, they walk to the edge of the cliff and I can help them jump off, which I usually do.
Right.
But sometimes it's thinking about home and their kids, or sometimes it's an injury, or you make something big from something little. You magnify the problem or the situation or whatever it is. I mean, you go to a challenge and it was you. You were the one that was supposed to, you know, sink the ball and you failed. Well, if I want that person to stay, oh, it's not a big deal. If I want them to go, then Jesus, you know, I can't believe, like, you could have made that with your eyes closed, you know? So yeah. There's ways to, of course, help the situation along. But usually they do it to themselves. Mm-hmm. I mean, they have moments and you have to keep your eyes open, man.
All right. So how does this season play out next week?
God, if I knew, I could make some more money. I think.
Let's just talk it down. Okay, so we're at 6 right now.
I think the winner has to be, I mean, I don't want to just go out and say it, but like there's two people that I think are playing the game better than anyone else up to this point that's left in the game.
Okay, who is it?
I think it's Jeremy, and I think it's Kelly.
I think you're right.
I think the two of them have played the game up to this point. Now, if they position themselves properly, I think it'll be close between the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
I think ultimately it will come down to who is best able to manage the jury in Final Tribal Council, which I don't know, because like I said, I've never been on the jury, so I don't know if people actually have their minds made up before they get there, or if they can actually be swayed. I have to believe that the majority of them already have their minds made up, but there would probably be a few people, and they're usually the more emotional people, that could be swayed by something that's said at the end.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that probably, you know, more than
someone, depending on who it is on the jury, I mean, you better be smart enough to be able to figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, someone like Abby's going to be pissed. She's pissed to be on the jury. Okay. So when you get up there, you better kiss her ass.
Yeah.
I'm serious. If you want her vote, you better kiss her ass, because the person that kisses it the best is getting her vote.
You're right.
Depending on, like, you know, someone like Joe, I don't know how hurt he is by the whole thing, but, you know, you might have to do a little bit, but I think you could probably prey more on his sensibilities than his emotion. That's just, and, you know, and I'm throwing it out. I don't know, but, like, from my point of view, from what I've seen on TV, that's what I see.
Okay. And then if you have to flip a coin, you got Jeremy or Kelly?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think they both provided awesome entertainment.
I've got so many questions for you. Let me give you some of them from the listeners of the podcast. This is from Bellatrix, wants to know, can we get the scoop on your reconciliation with Lex? And a lot of people over the summer, so when you were down in Florida, you took pictures with Lex. I think everybody was very excited to see that. Is this official? Rob and Lex are back?
Yeah, I don't know if we're back, but we were very cordial to each other. I saw Lex. It was great to catch up with him. I did see him this summer. And, you know, I feel like we're both kind of moved beyond it from the conversation that we had. And he's doing great. His kids are growing up now. And, yeah, I mean, I never had any animosity towards Lex, you know, ever. So, I mean, it was a tough situation then, but my perception now is different from when it was then. Yeah, we had a nice time and raised a bunch of money for some kids, and it was a great event.
Okay. Phil Gourlay wants to know, who would be the one person from Marquesas and one person from Redemption that you would most endorse for a second chance?
The one person from Marquesas has got to be my buddy Sean.
You're going to piss off John and Aaliyah.
I know, John and Aaliyah, I'm sorry. But I mean, really, I got to go with Sean. I think John and Aaliyah would be great, too.
Yeah. Now,
but my boy Sean, he's a classic. I still talk to him.
Yeah.
He's very funny. And I think he would be great on the show again. From, you know, that first season was so special to me because it was just like, you know, I don't even think I even thought about winning the game then.
Mm-hmm.
I was so much into this idea to have this adventure and have fun. And Sean was one of the guys that made it fun for me. So we had a blast together. I think he'd be great back on.
Do you think he would want to do it again though?
I don't know. I think he's been brought to the table a few times and ultimately it didn't work out. So I don't know that he has that desire anymore, meaning that, like, you know, they did this public vote this time,
mm-hmm.
but in the past they still did certain ideas and different auditions for different shows. And I think he's been invited a few times, but ultimately for one reason or another, it never worked out. So I don't know. But
is there anybody from Redemption Island?
You know, Natalie didn't get a chance. I would have loved to see her get a chance, but she didn't.
How do you think she would have done? I initially felt like she could have been the winner, but she's so nice. I don't know if she has that cutthroat gear that I feel like that just at the end that you need to at least at some point, you know, you got to make that one, not necessarily for the jury, but just to get yourself into position to do what you need to do.
I'm a firm believer of you have to be who you are and play the way you are and know who you are, you know? So I wouldn't expect her to go out and become a different player. I think I would be a modified version of what she was before.
Yeah.
And that is be somebody that's loyal. And I never told her this before. I just kind of said, you know what to do, go and do it. But I would be loyal and, you know, be nice, be sweet, be likable, because that's who you are and that comes natural to you. And you know what? Find somebody to team up with and go to the end again. But this time, you know, instead of like just going there, like when you get to that final tribal, figure out a way, even if you have to lie about it, make up something that was your strategy. Your strategy was, you know, to find someone to get attached to. But ultimately, you have to do more things along the way. And I think she knew that, you know. But don't change the basic core of who you are. I think Andrea would be great on the show. She had a second chance, actually.
Yeah, she played in Karamo. She played with Philip the second time.
Ashley was good. Ashley was a competitor.
Yeah. Can I ask you a question about that? When I rewatched that season, you're talking about Ashley, about how, like, you seem like you really... are getting bothered by her. Like, you seem like you're really annoyed with her down
You know
the
what it was? It wasn't a personal thing I was bothered by. It was kind of what we were talking about before, about perception and knowing your opponent and everything. And Ashley has a little bit of what I have in terms of being able to read people and stuff, but not to the degree that I do. So it was annoying that she would try these things and I would know what she was doing. And she was starting to get some of them to like do it and getting Philip. And it was more of a hindrance. And that's just to her credit, you know, and it was irritating to me.
Yeah.
You know, because I know what she's doing. It's like, you know, like if you go out there and then they're trying to do these things and you're like, look, I know what you're doing. Don't. Like, you know, but you can't tell them, like, don't do that, but you have to endure it. And, but no, from a personal point of view, I like Ashley.
Okay. Then this is a good question from Jessica Fresh. She wants to know, were you hesitant to tell people that Amber was pregnant on Redemption Island? Because like Jeremy, this season, you thought people wouldn't want to go with you to the end if they knew. How did you handle that in Redemption Island?
Yeah, you bet. Yeah. Actually, now you're asking me flip a coin. I think that's going to be the tiebreaker. I think that gets him the money.
But what did you
do? What did I do? I mean, I wasn't a secret. I didn't keep it a secret. And what I did was I sat next to Philip and Natalie. So I did good.
You told people during that you didn't, everybody knew.
Probably not in the early days. Yeah. But I think as the season went along, I probably did share it with them. I think, yeah, definitely that could hurt you. It could help you. And I don't think it really affected the game so much in my specific situation, but I think it could be a determining factor in a tiebreaker if people are actually thinking about that, but not if he like brings it up and says it. Like that would be horrific. I wouldn't do that because then you're looking for charity. Mm-hmm. So you got to be able to, that's another thing. Like you got to be able to plant that seed in a way that doesn't make it seem like, oh my God, like, are you kidding me? Like, you, this is what you're resorting to? Because, I mean, me from somebody that would, like, I think vote for an object, that would totally turn me off.
Yeah.
Like, you know, might even make me change my vote.
Wow.
But, yeah.
So what do you do? Does he just, like, sort of,
I mean, it's like, remember back in the day, the first season, was it BB? Who was the guy that was really rich?
I think that he was wealthy, the late, great BB.
Okay, so that's what they made it out to be, though. Like, he was like the Mr. Howell on the Gilligans, right? Like, he got all the money. And, like, that backfired on his ass so fast. So now, it's like these people, they go out there, they're former Jimmy Johnson.
Yeah.
You know, a former coach, he's got plenty of money.
Mm-hmm.
I would have dragged his ass to the end, too. I don't know why they voted him off. I'd have pumped his heart for him to keep him alive. He's a good guy, Jimmy. Yeah. I met him at the one of the finales. He invited me to go fishing. If he ever listens to your podcast, Jimmy, I'm still waiting to go fishing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's a big listener. He listens to all the shows.
Does he?
No, I don't think so.
He might.
He might, but I think he doesn't. For Jeremy, do you think it was a mistake for him to not tell people this long?
No. I mean, unless it becomes like, I think we're getting away from the fact that, you know, like we're playing a game of Survivor. The personal lives matter to a degree, your personal lives back home. But what matters more is your interaction and the reality that you create with these people on the island. That's what matters the most. Ultimately, I don't think that a vote is going to be swayed so much because you said this or didn't say it.
Well, you just said he'd lose your vote
if he pushed it as a selling point for the way he played Survivor. Mm-hmm. If he pushes the fact that he has a baby coming at home, yes, that would turn me off because that has nothing to do with it. And you're asking for charity, and that's not what this game is about.
Yeah.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, but I don't think like if he talks about, you know, his wife is pregnant at home, like that's him talking and sharing about his life with the people. Now, if he's saying it every day at, you know, every day around the clock talking about it, well, that's going to be annoying for the people on the island and they're not going to want to, you know, because then already it seems like that. And I don't think he did that. I mean, he wouldn't have gotten this far if he did.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe he did. Did Steven tell you he did?
I haven't talked to Steven that much about the season. Justin Feinberg wants to know, have you shown your kids you and Amber's season of Survivor or Amazing Race yet? Have you gotten to that point?
No, they haven't. They haven't seen it.
Do they know that?
They're not even in, like, they don't. They know that we were on it, but they don't. They're so, man, they're at such a cool age right now. Lucia's 6. Mm-hmm. Karina's going to be 5 tomorrow.
Yeah. Happy birthday.
Yeah, thanks. And Issa's 3.5 and the baby's 1.5. So they're into the challenge. They talk through every minute of strategy and I can't hear anything. But when the challenges are on, they're quiet. And Karina was crying tonight because Abby got voted off. They picked their favorites. Abby, my daughter Karina, is a big fan.
Yeah.
She was in tears crying, just like Lucia was last week with Joe. So, Abby, get in touch with me if you want, and we can video call Karina. She probably doesn't want to after this podcast, because I love you, Abby.
I don't think she listens to either, but maybe if her and Jimmy Johnson start, then we can get in touch with them.
Yeah, but no, they haven't asked or seen. They know that the Amazing Race comes on after Survivor, but they can't stay up that late. Like 8 o'clock is a stretch. It comes on at 7 here. So,
yeah,
it's a stretch. Next week, the finale, hopefully like school's ending that week. So yeah, we're going to stay up late for that.
Do you still follow Amazing Race?
No, I haven't. I mean, I still am fans of, Elise and Bertram, but I don't follow it. I mean, got a bad taste in my mouth there, buddy. like I really, really got a bad taste about that.
Yeah, I hear you.
But I don't lose sleep over it either, you know?
Yeah.
I just choose not to go there.
Okay. Edward Morris wants to know, would Amber play again without you? No, I know you got the small kids at home, but is it ever something that Amber talks about of like a one day maybe wanting to play again?
No, she's done.
Yeah.
She has said there's nothing in the world that would make her want to go back. It's kind of funny. Like, I think Elizabeth Filarski or Hasselbeck.
Yeah.
You know, I went to high school with him.
You went to high school with Tim Hasselbeck?
Tim and Matt.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I didn't know that.
Tim was a year younger and Matt was a year older.
Well, they both went to BC, right?
College, they went to BC.
Yeah.
But high school, we went to a high school called Severian.
Okay.
In Westwood, Mass.
Yeah. Yeah. Matt's not having a bad year, right?
No, he's doing good this year.
Yeah.
Maybe they should
keep him in. I thought he was retired.
Maybe they should keep him in. I don't know. Yeah, we lost 2 games in a row. High design. I think Belichick's a better strategist than anyone I've ever met.
he wants everybody to be off their guard. This is like when Tyson was milking his injury.
Listen, buddy, we're going to finish as a 3 seed, so since he can play Denver, and then we can slide right in there. As long as Pittsburgh doesn't start doing really good, we'll be okay, because they're going to be trouble, and it's going to be a lot more trouble for me if Pittsburgh upsets us in the playoff, because my wife is from there and I'll have to hear it.
Yeah.
We beat them the first game of the season and she's been quiet. So
yeah,
now they're making a run for it.
But what's been Amber's take with, that we have Kimmy and Jeff Varner back? I mean, she's just blown away that these guys are.
Oh yeah. No, she's been, she's been watching every week. Like I got sidetracked and said Elizabeth, but like, kind of like Elizabeth played and like didn't want anything to do with the show ever again. Not that Amber doesn't want anything to do with the show, but she doesn't have any desire. Yeah, but she still loves the show and supports it and watches it. And she just doesn't want to go out there in the rain and the bugs and sleeping on the ground anymore.
Yeah, I totally get it.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to do it again. But does she have anything to say about Kimmy or Jeff in particular?
Oh, just that, we were watching and she was rooting for him, to do good. And still, Kimmy, mean, they haven't shown a ton about Kimmy as far as, like, you know, from a strategic or game point in the confessionals. She's kind of been in the shadows. Same with Keith. I mean, Keith is coming into his own now, but like with six people left, they have more time to showcase everyone. But Keith seems like, you know, like the fun, lovable guy. I wouldn't bring him to the end. I mean, I think Keith could win, you know, where usually sometimes, I mean, depending on who he's sitting with, I mean, he hasn't pissed anybody off, right?
But I do feel like that there is this attitude this season that they want to vote for somebody who is at least did something strategically, that this is a season that I feel like...
Yeah, I guess you're right. I guess you're right in that respect. I'm sorry. You are correct. In this specific season, Keith probably can't win. In another season, I think Keith could win. Playing the game that he played.
He could have won his first season.
Yeah, I mean, it's sometimes if you have two people that play very aggressively and someone that hasn't really played, but they haven't pissed anybody off, sometimes, you know, they back into it.
And then last question. Jason Weatherholtz wants to know, would you let your daughters play in Survivor 67?
If they wanted to.
Would you let any of your kids?
If they wanted, if they wanted to, of course. I mean, it's not like I would be able to say, you know. They love watching it and they love the challenges. If they wanted to, of course I would let them. It's a great experience. Okay,
somebody from CBS is excited.
Yeah.
But I say, when people ask me that question, I say, I want better for my kids. They don't have to go down the path that I went down.
Yeah. No, I mean, look, I mean, you know, you have two kids now. You'd do anything for your kids. So if they wanted to, I would support them in whatever they want to do. My oldest wants to be an artist now. So she was excited talking to Joe as an artist. And I'm supportive of it. So,
like career day.
Yes. Yes.
All right, well, Rob, thank you so much for coming on. You know, I do appreciate, you know, how generous. I know it's getting late in the night, but so thank you so much for coming on. And of course, you could follow Boston Rob on Twitter.
I'm not the best at tweeting, buddy. I try to get one out as often as I can, but I'm still not sure I understand the point of it. Look at me, look at me, right?
Yeah, no, you're going strong.
Yeah, I'm trying to do better than I used to do. I remember getting a lot of shit back in the day from Dalton Ross because I'd be like, oh, it's sunny and 78 degrees. He's like, I remember it, like, kind of put me in, like, I stopped doing it for like a year. And I was like, oh my God.
He psyched you out.
Yeah, he did. He got me good. Yeah.
All right. And of course, the Boston Rob rule book, the strategies for life. I've got a link. You can go to robaswebsite.com/brrules.
Thanks.
Great stocking stuffer.
Yeah. Thank you, Rob, for honestly, doing all this and staying with it for all these years, man. I gotta tell you, like, seriously, I'm gonna not kiss your ass too much here, but like, it's pretty awesome. Like, I've watched you build this mini empire and it's really cool to see you find a part of yourself in this whole Survivor thing and what you do for the community and all of reality TV. I started off by saying you're like the Dr. Drew, but I just want you to know, I mean that in a really endearing way. Like, it's pretty cool that one of us, one of our own, is holding the torch up for everybody with all of this stuff, bro.
Okay. Well, I do appreciate it. The last time I was holding a torch, it didn't go so great. Yeah, well, so hopefully
you'll do fine. You're doing great, man.
Yeah, thank you so much, Rob. That really means a lot to me to hear it from you. And I know everybody loves to hear from you. So I don't want to wait 2 years to do this again.
Okay. Well, then we'll do it again in less time. Not every week like you and Tyson, but we'll do it again. We'll do it again another time whenever you call me. Okay, buddy?
Okay, you got it.
Tell your wife I said hello.
I will. And yeah, take care. All the best, buddy.
Okay, take care, man.
All right, everybody. There you have it. Boston Rob Mariano. That was pretty good, right? That was a good job there by Boston Rob. What is he quoting? Descartes and all sorts of other stuff on us, dropping motivational quotes and all sorts of psychology on us. Was not expecting that. Once again, blindsided by Rob Mariano. And this time it was good. It was good. I enjoyed this one. This was much, much better than previous times where that has happened to me. But great job all around by Rob. And I really hope you guys enjoyed that podcast because I certainly did. So here's where we're going next. The next part of our Survivor journey is going to be voicemails coming up with Mike Bloom. Going to probably get that one up for you guys on Friday morning. So that's coming up. If you haven't checked out our exit interview or know-it-alls, of course, you know where to find those. And then we'll be back on Friday night with the finale of The Amazing Race 27, down to three teams there. We are 1 hour away from finding out the winner of The Amazing Race. And of course, we'll have exit interviews on Monday. And then we start to shift gears into finale coverage for Survivor. Josh Wigler and I, we're going to be live from the finale for that show. So that's going to be very exciting. We'll have red carpet interviews. And of course, then I'll be back on Thursday to do our regular exit interviews. And then Josh and I think, are going to do a podcast on Thursday afternoon to wrap it all up. So make sure you're on board for everything on Rob Has a Podcast. Again, thanks to everybody who's been using our links for Amazon.com this holiday season. We certainly appreciate it, and it does help support the podcast, and it's basically the best place to go where you don't have to leave your house to do your holiday shopping, which I certainly appreciate. All right, thanks so much for listening. Looking forward to reading your comments on robhasawebsite.com, and again, we'll talk to you soon. Take care, everybody. Bye.